Hello, 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 and welcome back to another one. We got people here. We got over 100 people on TikTok already. We got Patrick Kennedy on YouTube already. Patrick's always ready to go whenever we're getting live on YouTube. I got movie tickets. I'm going to go see that new Yorgos Lanthimos movie. I hear it's crazy. I'll tell you, I'm not a Yorgos guy. I've seen all of them, and I keep trying. And it just doesn't land for me. To me, it's a little too inaccessible. I'm hoping I feel differently about this one. I recognize the game. Like, I recognize he got game, but it's just not landing for me. Like, I can't get in. Every time I watch a Yorgos movie, I'm just like, let me in there. And I see it. I'm like, I see you doing stuff. He's always doing stuff. He's making people talk in weird rhythms and all of that. But he won't let me get in there. And I'm hoping I can get in with this one. But I don't know. We'll see. I watched The Favorite for the first time recently. And I think that's my favorite Yorgos so far. Maybe Dogtooth is my favorite. Dogtooth was the first one. And that one was like, it's very weird. But I felt like Yorgos' style, the way that he has people talk and the stunted rhythm of the dialogue worked for Dogtooth because of the story that was being told. A bunch of people who are, you know, like raised in like on a compound and they don't know the outside world and they would be socially weird. But then he carries those rhythms and those like talking patterns into all of his films, and it doesn't make sense in the other ones to me. It's not as accessible. Anyway, we'll see. I recognize the game. I recognize that Yorgos like is doing a thing that not a lot of other filmmakers are doing. It's the same thing. It's the same I feel about Bong Joon-ho. Every time I watch a Bong Joon-ho movie, I'm like, I see that he's good at what he's doing and that he's doing a thing. It's just not hitting me the way I want it to. I'm not having the same experience that everyone else is having emotionally, but I recognize the craft, the skill that is there. The title of the episode, from a Blanket Fort recording studio, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, it's People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. Hello. Welcome. The title of the episode is Cheering for Catastrophe. Maybe I should have made the title The Dangers of Cheering for Catastrophe, but whatever, because I'm not actually cheering for catastrophe. I'm talking about people who are cheering for a catastrophe. I'm going to see this new Yorgos Lanthimos movie, Poor Things. I'm excited. But I saw a movie trailer recently that made me so scared. I woke up and like it was one of those trailers I watched like in bed. Like I wasn't ready to get out of bed yet. And I put this trailer on because it was just there in my suggested videos on YouTube. And the trailer for this movie made me be like, First thing in the morning, I had to see that. The trailer for this film, I was like, no, this movie's going to be such a bummer to watch, and I'm going to watch it. And Patrick Kennedy knows what it is. Patrick Kennedy said, fucking Civil War. And that's what it is, Civil War. Alex Garland has a new movie coming out called Civil War, and the trailer for it, I was like, oh, shit, the trailer bummed me out. And I was like, oh, God, like the thing about that trailer, I haven't even seen the movie. I don't even know what the Civil War in the movie is over. I could make some guesses. I could make a guess or two. But essentially, this movie looks like it's going to be about a situation where a civil war breaks out in the United States, in the modern United States. And it's going to be a sort of ideological war between who you would think it would be between. I would imagine. It seems like it's an ideological war between conservative good old boys and the rest of us. And Nick Offerman is like this. He seems to be this like conservative authoritarian president figure who starts waging war on, you know, the Western states and the more liberalized areas. And it looks fucking terrifying because it has that Handmaid's Tale thing going for it where like you're watching it going, this is fiction, but like also not. Really. The thing that's tough about watching The Handmaid's Tale, somebody said, who the fuck greenlit this Civil War movie? It's A24. So, like, it's an A24 movie by Alex Garland. I love Alex Garland. I'm a big Alex Garland fan. His last film was like, what I was talking about with Bong Joon-ho and Yorgos Lanthimos, where I couldn't get in. I felt like he left me out. Normally I can get in with Alex Garland. I really love Annihilation. I really love Ex Machina. But Men, I felt like I couldn't get in. I loved the show Devs. I fucking loved Devs. I might rewatch Devs. I love Devs. But yeah, Men, I thought, what an ending. Men has an incredible ending, but I couldn't get in. It just felt like he went into his own psyche and was like, I don't really care if you can get in here or not. But this movie looks terrifying. It has that Handmaid's Tale thing going for it where it's like, no, we're just so close to this. And the thing about just watching the trailer for this film, there's this bone-chilling moment in the trailer where Kirsten Dunst is on the run with her family trying to find safety, presumably, and she runs afoul of some U.S. soldiers, one of which is played by her husband, Jesse Plemons. And there's this line where she says something to the effect of, like, please, there's been a misunderstanding, we're Americans. And Jesse Plemons looks at her and he goes, yeah, yeah, I'm sure you are, but what kind of Americans are you? And it's just so, like, haunting the way that he says it, and the fact that you know that he's looking at her going, like, you better say the right fucking answer, like, you better have the right answer, or we're gonna end your life right now, and maybe not in a very pleasant way. And I see that trailer, and my first thought is, like, I'm not sure if people understand how easily that could happen. I think that we sort of live in the United States with an idea that, like, things might be bad. We might be ideologically divided. We might be not seeing eye to eye on everything. We might, you know, have really big disagreements, but, like, the country's not going to fall. We're not going to devolve into actually killing over each other over our ideological disagreements. We're not going to actually have to fight for control of the land. It almost always seems when you're in a country that's not actively at war, or when war is not actively happening on the soil where you live, it almost always seems like situations where you know, mortars and shells are blasting through walls and your neighbors and friends are being killed on a daily basis. That feels so far away. But we know right now through the internet that, like, this is the reality for so many people in the world right now. This is the reality for people who live in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is the reality for people in Gaza. This is the reality for people in the Ukraine. This is their life right now, day to day. This is where they find themselves. Cielo on TikTok just said, every empire thinks they're invincible until they're not. That's one of the taglines in the trailer for this movie, is every empire falls. And that tagline even is just, like, bone chilling, because you see that and you're like, that's not a lie. That's not untrue. That's a tagline for a film, but it's also just something that is true. And America is an empire that has been experiencing what feels like irreconcilable differences for a long time now. And to know that there are places in the world where people just like you and me are experiencing this, where the ideological divide has gotten to a place where neither side can see a way through except to kill each other, except to, like the only way that we can solve this is if all of you are gone and we have to get rid of you. And that seems to be the way that humans do things throughout history. And I don't know about you out there, but I don't want this. I don't want to live through that personally. I know that there's a brand of activist, there's a kind of activist that feels like if you're not willing to put it all on the line and to put your safety and your life and the lives of the people that you love on the line for your cause, then you're just a poser. You're not the real deal. You don't actually have convictions that are worth talking about or caring about. But I don't know. I don't think that's me, dude. I think I'm the kind of guy, call me a coward if you want, but I think I'm the kind of guy that if people start breaking out the weapons and saying, we're going to fight over this land here and you're going to have to fight if you want to stay here. And if you're, you know, if you're going to have to fight if you want to protect the things that matter to you, I'd be like going, hey, Canada, here I come. I'd be calling everyone that I care about and saying, where are we going? What country are we going to? Because we're not staying here. I'm not going to stay here and fight with these hooligans. Like, we're going. And I don't want that for myself. I don't want that for the people that I care about. I just watching The Handmaid's Tale is hard enough. I need that show to be over. There's one season left and I'm going to watch it because I've watched every other season. But it has been a show where I'm just like, I watch this show and it kills me. It kills me how much I recognize what's going on in the characters in the show. The reason why the citizens of Gilead are so distasteful to me is because they resemble people that I know and they have values that resemble people that I know. And I find it repugnant. And I hear people who are at least vocally, at least verbally, at least by their words, they seem to be willing and excited about the opportunity to enforce their repugnant values and beliefs through violent force. And they're just waiting for the chance. Champing at the bit? Sometimes people say champing because everyone says chomping and it's one of those things where people are like, it's actually champing. It feels like it should be chomping. You get what I'm saying. They're excited about the opportunity to violently fight for and enforce their ideals. And I'm not. I don't want to do that. What I think won't help with this is the current attitude I'm seeing from a lot of my fellow leftists as it pertains to two people on TikTok just said chomping. It's chomping. It's chomping at the bit. And Patrick says it's champing, but both really work. So we have both. We'll go with both. But what I'm seeing, this attitude of just like, we're not voting for Joe Biden again. We're going to tank the election and we're going to lose because we're mad at Joe Biden for supporting Israel. And y'all, like, it's crunch time. Like, it is about to be 2024. It's an election year and it's going down and it's going to be one of those two guys. And we need to sort of talk about this in a realistic sense and get real about like the fact that like, we don't have time to organize a campaign for a radical left, far left socialist candidate that we would all love. That's just not going to happen in the amount of time that we have remaining before November. And I don't think people fully understand the gravity of like what the GOP is trying to do with like things like Project 2025 and like and trying to rewrite the Constitution to favor the unpopular minority, the religious minority in the country. And I don't think that people understand that like something like that, a radical restructuring and rewriting of the country's foundational values, could be the thing that sets off irreconcilable differences to the point of going, well, then we need to fight over this, actually. And I'm going to read this post that I engaged with on Threads that sort of, I think, helps, that sort of illustrates this talking point well. This person, I won't say their name on here, but this person wrote, why do y'all hate Trump more than you love people in Palestine? Why are y'all scared of Trump more than you are scared of the most horrifying stuff happening under a Democrat? I can see how people would hear that and go like, yeah, good point. You know, like what you think that Trump being president is worse than what's happening in Gaza right now? First of all, I would say, there's not really a way to know, but like, yeah, if the Trump presidency leads to an American civil war, then like what's happening there won't just be happening there. It will be happening in your backyard too. So kind of, yeah, first of all, like Donald Trump being president is not going to stop what's happening in Gaza, at all. Anyone who thinks that Trump is somehow like the pro-Palestine anti-genocide candidate has it wrong. That's just not correct. Second of all, this the way that this the second half of this post is worded. Why are y'all scared of Trump more than you are scared of the most horrifying stuff happening under a Democrat? The way that this is worded makes it sound like what is happening in Gaza is a direct result of America having elected Joe Biden, that this would not have been happening if America had not voted for Joe Biden. And that is also not true. It is true that America supports Israel and gives billions of dollars of aid to Israel and has historically supported Israel. It is true that America's position politically, whether Democrat or Republican, has been across the board with our politicians to be pro-Israeli, that like that's just sort of the America political carte blanche position. It's one of those few things that Democrats and Republicans agree on. But that means that it was true that Joe Biden supported Israel when you voted for him in 2020. This is something I've already said on the podcast before, but I'll repeat it again. These were the values that the guy had when you first voted for him in 2020. And like, I also just want to remind everyone that like, for those of us who consider ourselves leftists, who consider ourselves to be pretty far left, we didn't like him then either. We weren't excited to vote for Joe Biden. He was not the guy that we wanted to vote for. We weren't like, oh, yes, we got the candidate we all wanted. We didn't really like any of the candidates, but he was like far down on the list for a lot of us. Like most of us, you know, in 2020 and 2016 would have preferred Bernie Sanders or someone like maybe Elizabeth Warren or, you know, just someone who we felt like we would have a better shot at getting more progressive policies through. Really the only person that's run in either of those elections that actually could have been capable potentially of doing something that would have favored actual leftist philosophy and leftist thought is Bernie Sanders. But Bernie wasn't a viable candidate in either of those elections because the Democratic National Convention told us so. And that is unfortunately a bummer reality of our Democratic system right now, is the RNC and the DNC get to tell us kind of who the candidates are going to be. And it sucks and it's not fun, but we sort of do what we have to do. We saw after 2016 that doing the stick it to the DNC vote and saying, fuck that, I'm never going to vote for her, I'm going to vote my conscience and vote for Hillary, didn't really pan out. And it resulted in an obvious outcome with Trump victory, even though he still lost the popular vote. He was able to win in the very stupid electoral college, which is a thing that is also another bad thing. I just think that it's important in an election year to just have realistic conversations about what our democracy actually is and how it actually functions. It's not how we want it to be. It doesn't function the way we want it to function. It's not we don't get the things that we wish we could get. And especially as leftists, there is no far left mainstream political representation in the United States. And there hasn't been really kind of ever, but definitely not in my lifetime. There has not been a mainstream, viable far left political option. The closest thing we get on the left is the Democratic Party, inadequate as it is, and it is inadequate. But yeah, this person's saying, like, you're more afraid of a Trump presidency than you are of what's happening right now under a Democrat. This implies that, again, like, what's happening right now in the Middle East would not be happening under a Republican candidate. It would. It also implies that, like, what's happening right now is because of a Democrat. Is because a Democrat was elected, this is happening. And it's like, that's just not true. This would be happening no matter who we elected. This would be happening. This has been happening every single day of my life. This has been happening every day for the last 75 years, at least. And this would have continued to happen and continue to unfold no matter who won the 2020 election. So this sort of wording of like, you guys are so afraid of Trump, but you're not afraid. It's like not wanting Trump to win and thinking that what's happening in Gaza right now is terrible. Those are two values you can hold. You can be anti-genocide and anti-ethnic cleansing and pro-Palestinian and still have an eye on where you live, have an eye on your local situation, and trying to prevent catastrophe in your backyard. You can do both of those things. You don't need to go, well, because people over there don't have it fair, I say fuck everyone. And just, fuck everybody then. You know, I don't give a shit if Donald Trump's president. And it's like, well, you can do both. You can say, I really, really disagree with the United States' political position on this issue and with the United States government's support of Israel. I really disagree with that. And also, I can't let Donald Trump become president. You can do both of those things. But I'm going to read a follow-up post that this woman wrote because someone responded to her and was trying to talk about how, you know, this mindset is going to lead to a Trump victory. So essentially, this mindset is a vote for Trump. And her response was this. My point is that y'all, she likes to say y'all a lot in these posts. That's fine, whatever. My point is that y'all are even considering Trump an option. Like, why are we, and this person is white, by the way, I should say. I want to clarify that I'm not like criticizing AAVE or something. Like, this is a white person saying y'all a lot. She might be from the South, or she might just be like trying to speak with an internet slang. Who knows? I think it makes a political post feel a little unserious, but it's fine. My point is that y'all are even considering Trump an option. Like, why are we defending Joe Biden when we should be criticizing him? I am not voting for Biden. I am not voting for Trump. Anti-Biden does not mean pro-Trump. I am a socialist who does not support genocide. I will be voting for a socialist. You Democrats and liberals have 1 year to either give me a socialist candidate or lose. So just correction there on the last part, it's less than a year. It's about 10 months. And that's not going to happen. The Democratic Party is not going to give you a socialist candidate in that time. And you know that. You know that they're not going to do that. So this whole thing of like, you have a year to give me the candidate I want. It's like, well, they're not going to. They've already made it clear who their candidate is going to be. So you know what the options are. And so like, there's something about this that I think a lot of people on the left right now feel like is incredibly principled and respectable. And to a certain degree, it is. It's a person who's just saying, I refuse to compromise on my values. I refuse to compromise on my morals. I don't care what that means, what the outcome of that is. I won't do that. I had a really good friend in 2016 who I had a long conversation with where we were being very respectful with each other, where he was telling me that he was just going to vote for Bernie Sanders and he did not care that Bernie Sanders wasn't going to win. And I kept saying things like, you understand, though, that that means that you, a person who otherwise maybe would be voting for Hillary Clinton, let's say that on the ballot, the only two options that you could even vote for, there wasn't even a write-in option. The only two options they gave you were Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And let's say that it was illegal not to vote. You had to. Who would you pick? You'd be picking Hillary Clinton. So like a person who would be picking this, you know, Hillary Clinton is not voting for Hillary Clinton, which means that Hillary Clinton is losing a necessary vote in a disputed state, by the way. And essentially what you're doing is voting for Trump. Your conscience vote becomes ipso facto through, you know, the transitive property, it becomes a vote for Donald Trump, whether you like Trump or not. And my friend really, really was pushing back on me on this. He was just saying, no, I really believe I have to vote my conscience. And I said, but you understand Bernie Sanders does not have a chance to win. You're not voting for someone who has a chance to actually win the election. And he said, well, not with your attitude. He doesn't. And I hear this thing a lot too, like, well, if we just keep reinforcing the system as it is, then we can't change the system. And I get this. There is a sort of idealistic logic here of like, well, if that's the attitude of just like, well, we can't, then we won't. And I get this, but again, it's like 10 months. We are not going to change the way that the election system in this country works in the next 10 months. We're just not going to. And it's not because my attitude is bad. It's because it's simply not going to happen. It's just because that is the unfortunate, uncomfortable reality that we find ourselves in. It's sort of like, you know, if you and your friends made an indie film that you crowdfunded $100,000 and you made a passion project and you released it on Vimeo and you were really proud of it. And one of your friends was like, I'm going to submit this to be considered for the Academy Awards. And then you were like, well, that's fine, but it's not going to win any Academy Awards or be nominated for any Academy Awards. And your friend was like, well, not with that attitude. And it's like, no, it has nothing to do with my attitude. It just has to do with the fact that, like, it's not going to happen. It's just not a thing that is a possibility with the resources that we have at our disposal. Like, we will not in the next 10 months orchestrate a successful grassroots campaign for a third party radical socialist candidate. It just won't happen. Even if we were able to do it, the DNC and the RNC would not allow it. Like, we would see catastrophic upheaval and interference from the powers that be to retain their power. And I think this is something that we have to find another means to do it, because it's just not going to happen that way. And so my friend, you know, did vote for Bernie Sanders, as did many people, and we saw what the result was. This person here saying this, this second half where she writes, you know, my point is that y'all are even considering Trump an option. Again, this is sort of like, why aren't you changing your mindset? Why are you even considering Trump an option? It has nothing to do with mindset. He is an option. He just is. It's just been made clear that he is the far and away front runner for the Republican Party. And that means that between 70 to 75 million people are going to vote for him. So it's not about, like, whether or not I'm considering Donald Trump an option. It's not about whether or not with my mindset I'm allowing to accept that Donald Trump is an option. It's just about being real about the fact that he just is. He's going to be on the ticket, and he's going to be the front runner for that party, and he's going to receive their share of the votes. And that's just what's going to happen. It has nothing to do with, like, whether or not we are allowing it to happen or whether or not we are allowing to consider him an option. So we just have to deal with this with a lot of, like, not fun and uncomfortable and unfortunate pragmatism. The second half of this sentence, like, why are we defending Joe Biden when we should be criticizing him? Saying you need to vote for Biden is not the same thing as defending him. You can criticize Joe Biden plenty. We were criticizing Joe Biden in 2020. We were saying, we don't want to vote for this guy. He's too old, and we think his policies are way too far to the center. If anything, he has a lot of policies that are, like, moderate right. We were criticizing Joe Biden when we voted for him in 2020. You can totally criticize the fuck out of Joe Biden and still be like, I got to prevent Donald Trump from being president. It has nothing to do with defending him or saying that, like, his policy on Israel is okay, or that, like, what's happening in Gaza is okay. It just has to do with trying to prevent what's happening in Gaza from happening in your backyard, from happening to your family, in your immediate neighborhood, and trying to stave off the rise of authoritarian fascism and authoritarian theocracy that is happening on the right, the extremism on the right. Because here's another unfortunate reality about the way our democracy is currently structured, and I've talked about this a lot on the podcast before, is there is no, and I already said this earlier in the show, there is no mainstream political representation for the far left in America, but there absolutely is mainstream political representation for the far right. It's not fair, it's not cool, but we have mainstream representation for the radical right in America. The Republican Party, the party of the right wing, is a radicalist party. It is an extremist party. It is a religious extremist party. It is a party of religious zealots who want to transform the foundational values of the country to make the country functionally no different from Gilead in The Handmaid's Tale. These are people who want to create an authoritarian theocracy where the entire country has to abide by their religious beliefs, and that nothing I'm saying is even remotely hyperbolic. If anything, I'm, like, not sounding the alarm as much as I maybe should be. These people are terrifying, and they have real power and real representation. It fucking sucks that the far left has no real power or no real representation, and that we are constantly the ones who ideologically have to compromise in order to prevent the religious extremists on the right from gaining more power. It sucks that that's where we find ourselves, but that is where we find ourselves. That is the reality of the situation that we find ourselves in. So continuing to move through this post from this woman, she says, "I am not voting for Biden. I am not voting for Trump. Anti-Biden does not mean pro-Trump." I responded to her with this, and I said, unfortunately, your math is not mathing there, because as we discussed earlier, this last sentence where she says, "You Democrats and liberals have 1 year to give me a socialist candidate or lose," she knows, whether she wants to admit it or not, that that's not going to happen. So she's aware that the Democratic Party is not going to say, you know what, the sitting president, he's out, and we're going to find someone that really represents the values of the far left. The Democratic Party has never done that for us, and they are not going to in 2024. They are going to do the thing that the incumbent party always does, and they are going to run the incumbent candidate. That is what's going to happen. So knowing that you are not going to get the candidate that you want, and saying, if I don't get the candidate that I want, I am going to tank your party's election and make sure that the other guy wins, that is whether you like that guy or not. So she says, you know, being anti-Biden or is not being pro-Trump, whether you like Trump or not, yeah, it kind of is, actually. Yes, it is, because there are two options. You have two options, and if you are voting for old guy who's president right now, who's so old and should never have been elected, but he was, and he's so very old, and we all hope that he doesn't end the world because he's so old. if you want that guy to lose, that means that the other guy is going to win. And the other guy wants to be a dictator. The other guy wants to be president till he's dead. And he wants to, he already did so much damage in the courts, both the lower courts and the Supreme Court, in the four-year term that he had. Just massive damage that's going to take generations to undo. We cannot afford another 4 years, but also I'm not sure if the country and our democracy as we know it will survive another 4 years with Donald Trump and what the GOP has planned. Again, remember that radical right extremists have actual political representation and political power. They actually have the means to transform the country into their unpopular beliefs within their reach. It's doable. This is not something that the radical left has the capability of doing in the next 4 to 10 years. We have to play the long game. We have to play the practical, long game where we're constantly compromising, and it sucks and it's not fair. But these people could turn the country into what they want in a couple of years. There are Mike Johnson, the current Speaker of the House, who would be third in line for the presidency if Donald Trump were elected, is part of a committee that wants to rewrite the Constitution to enshrine conservative values in the Constitution. Wants to rewrite the Constitution. You can bet you can believe they're going to try to get rid of anything that even hints at separation of church and state. You can believe they're going to reinforce the flimsy language in the Second Amendment to make gun laws looser and to make gun rights and gun ownership rights even worse than they already are in this country. You can bet that they're going to make sure that the Constitution enshrines foundationally that abortion is illegal and that, you know, women who commit abortions and men who help should be jailed and tried for murder. The country will radically transform, and a transformation like that, if America were to be allowed to actually become a functioning authoritarian theocracy, not just a country that is teetering on the edge of becoming an authoritarian theocracy, a country that is flirting with the possibility of becoming an authoritarian theocracy, if we actually went there, if we actually pushed it over the edge, that is the kind of situation that could result in a civil war sort of scenario where millions of people need to flee for their lives and try to find refuge somewhere where they won't be hunted down and killed. These are people who are openly talking about how they want to sterilize trans people, how they want to make sure that queer people no longer have civil rights protections, and that gay people can't get married anymore. They want to transform the country to become a country that has laws that obey that follow the unpopular minority, an unpopular religious extremist minority. And if that were to actually happen, and you actually had friends who were being hunted down for getting an abortion, or you actually had friends who were needing to flee because their state was trying to sterilize them, we would suddenly find ourselves in a situation where dealing with things through the process of democracy and through elections and voting would no longer be viable. And you would either have to stand your ground and try to pick up a gun and fight, or you'd have to try to seek refuge and seek cover. And this is what I mean with this title of cheering for catastrophe, because the thing that scares me right now is it feels like a lot of people on the far left who are really, really frustrated with the Biden administration and their pro-Israel stance and all of this stuff are almost, and I see this more and more, and this didn't just start in the last couple months. This has been a philosophy on the left for a long time, but it feels like it's gaining traction as we head into a critical election year, and that's what scares me. This idea that, like, what people would rather see, they almost want Donald Trump to win so that it will usher in the fall of the country and a catastrophic upheaval and a catastrophic violent revolution. They almost are rooting for the whole thing to burn to the ground. It's almost like, I'm so sick of not being able to get my way. I'm so sick of always having to be the ideology that has to compromise. I'm so sick and tired of always seeing Republican voters and Republican legislators be able to get their way and get policies that actually reflect their values, and people that have my values having to settle for policies and lawmakers that are only like adjacent to my values. And because of that, I'd rather watch the entire thing burn. I'd rather watch the entire thing crumble and fall. And I see people in the comments of this chat right now going, yes, that's what I want. Yes, that's what I want. And that scares the shit out of me. That honestly terrifies me. That's what I wanted to talk about on this episode today, is when I watched that trailer for that Alex Garland film about a country that is falling apart, that resembles the country that I live in, I look at that and I go, that is absolutely possible, and it could happen in my lifetime, and it could actually happen in this decade if we're not careful. Because the extremists who love guns and love violence and want to will the country to obey their values through force actually have mainstream representation and power. And they are very close this year to getting even more mainstream representation and power from a person who is one of the most dangerous people they have ever elected, who seems to be impenetrable, who seems to be able to commit any crime, to do any wrong and get away with it. And we're looking down the barrel of that man becoming president again. And it's hard to say what that will look like and what that could happen and what the result of that could be. And I see a lot of people on the left going, let it happen. Let it burn. Let it all crumble and fall. And the thing that scares me about this mindset is it reminds me a lot of the mindset that Christian conservatives have regarding the apocalypse. The reason why philosophically and ideologically, Christian conservatives tend to not be super worried about things like climate change or things like the unsustainability of our crumbling economic framework and late-stage capitalism just becoming worse and worse and worse, and how exponential growth capitalism is obviously not sustainable and we are going to run out of resources and there will become a point where no one can earn enough at their jobs to buy any of the things that keep getting more and more expensive. The reason why they don't care about that stuff is because they, in a way, are cheering for catastrophe. They believe, it's a foundational belief of theirs, that like the world falling apart and climate disasters happening and wars breaking out all over the world would be the fulfillment of prophecy, that this would be the beginning of what would usher in the second coming of Christ. And so it's sort of like, well, it's totally okay if our economic framework is crumbling, we're not going to need money when Jesus Christ comes again. It's okay if the world is heating up at a dangerous level and the ice caps are melting. Everything's going to be reset and made better when Christ comes again. So these are people who are rooting for catastrophe. They are cheering for things to burn and things to fall apart. And it is a dangerous philosophy. And I see a mirror image of this growing in popularity on the left that really alarms me. People who are saying, fuck it all. If I can't get my way in the next 5 years or 10 years or in my lifetime, I want it all to burn. And I just think that there's not enough of an eye on I can't get on board with it philosophically because I just kind of go like, do you not have people in your life whose well-being you value? Like, are you not concerned about what that might do to your friends, your family members, who you love, to future generations? Like, do you not have any regard for future generations? Because, look, things are bad in America. We have a healthcare system that is infuriating and inhumane. The cost of higher education keeps going up and up and up. The cost of everything keeps going up and up and up. We have a completely untenable housing market that is completely inhospitable and not welcoming to newcomers. We got a lot of problems. A lot of problems that a lot of leftist ideas and philosophies could fix. And so it is frustrating to watch this shit continue to go unfixed and unaddressed year after year after year. But at least the country is intact. At least, like, for now, we're hanging on. The duct tape is holding us together. We still live in a country where the people that you know, the people that you're friends with, the people that you are in your family can go about their lives with some reasonable comfort, at least relative to what is being experienced by people in the Ukraine, people in the Gaza Strip, people in the Congo. Like, you can see that there are people in the world who are having a worse ride than you are having right now, who are having a decidedly much worse time of it than you are. And what you're saying is, I want what they're having for me and all of my friends and family. I want that too. I'm so upset about what's happening to them that I want that to happen to me and everyone that I care about as well. That's how mad I am about it. It's like, you're not wrong to be mad about it. You're not wrong to be upset. You're not wrong to wish that your political leaders more closely reflected your actual ideals. You're not wrong to wish that you didn't always have to be part of the ideology that is constantly compromising because the other side is so dragged in the far extreme direction of their ideology. You're not wrong to be frustrated that our country continues to say, you get these two options and only these two options. And those two options so regularly are so unappealing and unappetizing. And like, that you're always having to vote for someone that you're like, I don't want to vote for this person. I just really, really, really don't want to vote for the other person. You're not wrong to be fed up and sick and tired of that. But if your response to that is, because I'm so fed up and because I'm so sick and tired, I want life for me and all of my friends and family to be extremely worse. I want everyone's life to be way worse than it already is because I'm so fed up. I don't think, I don't track the logic. I just don't think you're playing the tape out. I don't think you're actually going all the way down. And if you are, and what you want for you and your life, if you're okay with the chaos and the catastrophe and you're saying, bring it on, I'll go get an M16 and I'll stand a post and I'll fight some Proud Boys. If that's what you're saying, well, cool. You know, that's you. But I would say that you're being kind of selfish to go like, I'm going to wish this on everyone. I'm going to make it so that everyone has to deal with a civil war in the United States because I was sick and tired of not getting my way. And I would just say, like, have some perspective on that. Even though you live in a country where there are a lot of systems and institutions that are incredibly frustrating and that feel like they're broken and feel like they're not working in your favor, you still live in a country that, for the most part, is still intact and moving forward. And you live in a country where there are more people who agree with you ideologically than there are people who don't. Your ideals are popular. We know this. We know that being pro-choice and believing that abortion is healthcare is the popular stance in America. We know that believing that America needs to address its gun laws and needs to do something about its gun violence problem is the popular position in America. We know that your beliefs are actually more popular. We know that believing that trans people are people who are valid and deserve full rights and protections, that queer people deserve protection and deserve visibility and representation is the popular position. We know these things. We know that the reason why Hollywood seems to have a left-leaning bias is because capitalism actually has a left-leaning bias. Because left stories that seem to pay, you know, I mean, Hollywood doesn't actually have a left-leaning bias. That's a whole other episode that we could do about how Hollywood's actually like very conservative because it's run by people who like money, and that's a very conservative thing. They're trying to, you know, just get as much money as they possibly can. But in the pursuit of getting as much money as they possibly can, they make a lot of stories that sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge at leftist people because people on the left and the ideals of the left are more popular in America than the ideas of people on the right. They're also just more humane and more empathetic, and they appeal to a wider swath and a more diverse swath of people and a bigger market than the rights does. The rights movies and media can only appeal largely to white Christian people. It's a very, very, like, honed in market, whereas the left's ideals and ideology can appeal to a much more diverse and bigger market. So, and through a capitalistic lens, your ideals show up a lot, at least in, you know, sort of like lip service and like having a non-binary character with purple hair say a couple lines here and there. these are things to look at and go, it sure could be a lot worse. And what you're saying with the whole burn it all down is, I want it all to be a lot worse. I wish it was all a lot worse. I think things would be better if we let things get a lot worse. And I don't think so. I don't agree. I actually think that, unfortunately, the best option we have as leftist people with leftist ideology who have no mainstream representation or political power in the United States, the best option we have is to try to keep as much power away from the right-wing religious extremists as we possibly can, because they do actually have mainstream political representation. They do actually have mainstream political power. So the best thing we can do to try to stay relatively safe is try to minimize how much power they have. And that's honestly, and it's definitely the best we're going to be able to do in the next 10 months. And you know what? We'll keep working together to try to see if we can get closer in 2028. We'll keep working on it, and we'll keep seeing it. We got to get a new candidate by 2028. It can't be Joe Biden in 2028. So we got to find a new person, and we'll keep working on it. And we'll keep seeing if we can try to push for a more progressive candidate. But we might not get there if we don't win this next one. We might not be able to do that, engage in that work, if we let Donald Trump win. Our biggest goal as a country right now, in a local sense, in this next year, has to be to continue to try to minimize the amount of power we let those people have, because those people want to transform the country into a authoritarian theocracy, and that is not hyperbole. That is their out loud, public, no dog whistle, no code speaking plan. That is what they want to do. And the very safety of your queer friends, the very safety of your friends who exist in the BIPOC community and are, you know, people of color, your indigenous friends, the safety and well-being of the people that you care about depends on it. And if you have this mindset of, I don't care, I'm fed up, I want to watch the whole thing burn, I don't care if civil war happens, then you do not have the safety and well-being of the people that you care about in mind. You just have chaos and catastrophe in mind. And while I understand and sympathize and empathize with your frustration, I think you need to try to take the temperature down and come back down, and let's get realistic here and think about, what can we salvage? What can be spared? What can be saved? life is unimaginably horrific right now for a lot of people in the world. It is unimaginably terrible. It's pretty bad here for a lot of people. We don't have to make it unimaginably, unthinkably worse in order to get what we want, you know, like in order to make our voices heard. It doesn't do anything for Palestinians for us to usher in our own civil war. That will not solve the situation in Gaza. That won't help anybody. It will only make our situation worse. So making our situation worse definitely doesn't make anybody else's situation better. It doesn't make the situation in the Congo better. It doesn't make any global situation better. It just makes our situation worse. Believe me, I understand the frustration that is tied to this idea and this philosophy. I just think that we got to try to preserve what safety we can here. Warm Mouth said, this mindset is why absolutely nothing changes. So you might be just joining us, and that's okay if you are. I already addressed this earlier, that I had a friend in 2016 who said the same thing, who said he was going to vote for Bernie Sanders no matter what. And I said, well, Bernie Sanders isn't going to win. And he said, well, not with that attitude. And I talked about this earlier, that like Bernie Sanders winning or not in 2016 had nothing to do with my attitude or the attitude of, you know, people on the left at large in America. It had to do with the reality of that election year. And the reality of that election year was it was going to be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And if you didn't want it to be Donald Trump, you needed to accept that Hillary Clinton was the only option you could vote for. And that has nothing to do with attitude. There are certain things going on in the world where an attitude adjustment is not going to change it. My attitude is that I want better options. My attitude is that I want better political representation for further left ideals in America, that I want the far left to have actual political representation and actual political power in America. That's my attitude. That's what I want to push for, and that's what I want to advocate for with my words, with the messaging in my content, in my podcast. I always want to be arguing for the validity and the logic of leftist ideology. But my attitude and my beliefs are not going to change the fact that in 10 months, we are going to have an election and that the two options that are going to be presented to us are Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And me going, I'm just going to change my attitude and just believe that someone else is going to win, is not going to change it. I really think that people hear this and they think that what I'm saying is we just need to like surrender to this system and never worry about changing anything. I believe that all we can really do as far left people with no mainstream political representation is keep power away from far left, far right extremists as much as possible, and do everything we can to encourage and advocate for the logic and the viability of leftist ideology in the public space and in the public, you know, like discourse, so that those ideas continue to be popular. I think that we actually have done a lot in our advocacy as people without mainstream political representation to make our ideas popular, to show people the logic and the reason in our ideas, to show people that like there just simply is no logic in treating queer people like second-class citizens because of what a book says about them, when that book has been retranslated thousands of times, retranslated 450 times alone in the English language, and didn't include the word homosexual in it until the year 1946. It makes no logical sense to have societal rules dictating what these people can and can't do because of a book like that. And we've been able to successfully make that idea and that concept popular. And because we were able to make it popular, we were able to change some laws in this country. We have to do it slowly and bit by bit, and it's frustrating, and we often have to make a lot of really frustrating compromises, but we do get stuff done in this country. So I'm definitely not just saying like there's nothing we can do. All we can do is keep voting for Democrats and just let them do whatever they want. I'm just saying that we do have to be realistic when it comes to election years, and be realistic about the fact that in November of 2024, there will be two options. And if you don't want one of the, if you don't want Donald Trump to win, you're going to have to vote for the other option. And my mindset, my attitude has nothing, has no effect on that reality. That just is the reality that we find ourselves in. It's sort of like, you know, telling someone who's been given a stage three cancer diagnosis, like who's saying like, well, here's my options. I can do surgery or I can do chemo, or, and you're like, well, if you think those are your only options, I guess that you're, nothing's going to change because of your mindset. And it's like, well, no, this just is the situation I find myself in. It sucks. I wish I wasn't in this situation, but I have to sort of deal with the options that have been given to me. Chris McCrander says, the presidential vote isn't the only move we have either. Live your whole political life as left as you please. Then hold your nose for a moment and vote for Biden. Then go back to rocking the left. I agree. There's a lot more that we can do as left-leaning people and as leftists who hold far-left ideology. There's a lot more that we can do than simply voting in a presidential election every 4 years. There's just get involved in politics at the local level. Continue to talk to your friends and family members about your ideas. Continue to try to like proselytize about the value of your ideas. Continue to champion and uphold voices in your community that you think are pushing for the right idea. There's just like so much more that you can do than simply voting for a president every 4 years. But unfortunately, one of the things that we are, that is part of, that is, you know, kind of tantamount to keeping the country intact is making sure that far-right religious extremists don't gain more power than they already have. Because the fact that they have as much representation and power as they already have is already, like, not great. It's already terrifying. And we don't really have the luxury of kind of stepping back and going, let's just re-envision this. Let's all not participate in the system as it is anymore. And let's re-envision what it could be. We just don't have that luxury. Unfortunately, we don't have that time and that space to do that. We sort of have to operate inside of the parameters of the system and then do everything that we can inside of those parameters to continue advocating for leftist ideology and leftist thought, and hope that we can craft a future that's better for future generations. Sean says, let's not let Biden be the primary candidate. So again, Sean, it has nothing to do with us letting him be the candidate or not, just like we didn't let him be the candidate in 2020. The Democratic National Convention told us that he was going to be the candidate, and we have no real way to affect that, and it sucks. There are so many realities and truths about the current way that our electoral system is set up that are really frustrating. The Electoral College, for instance, is a system that is very frustrating and that does not adequately represent the actual population of people that exist in this country. And it was literally created so that unpopular ideas could have a fighting chance in the political realm, which just doesn't make a lot of sense logically. It's just sort of like, an unpopular idea should stay unpopular. It should be acknowledged as being unpopular. But also, I think there is some reason to it, because at some point, a lot of the ideas that we are getting across that are leftist ideas used to be unpopular and are now popular. So, you know, unpopular ideas do still need representation, but there are a lot of aspects of our electoral system, the way it is set up, that we can't really do a whole lot about, at least not in the next 10 months. And one of those is the fact that, like, we are not going to be able to tell the DNC, we want a different candidate, we refuse to vote for Joe Biden. You can personally refuse to vote for Joe Biden in 2024, as I imagine millions of people are going to do. I'm going to spend all of this next year trying to convince you not to do that, because all you are doing when you do that is voting for Donald Trump, whether you think you are or not. That is what you're doing. I've already explained why on this podcast. I can explain it again. Essentially, just the reality is it's one of those two options. And if you don't vote for this one, that means you are helping this one win. And it doesn't, you know, Sean says, I feel special for you acknowledging me. I appreciate your response. I am less studied than you are. Well, hey, I appreciate the comment, Sean, and thank you for being open to feedback on your position. I really, really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Sean says, if it is Biden versus Trump, I will vote for Biden. I really appreciate that, Sean. And Sean has a Palestinian flag as his profile picture and in his name. And I appreciate that. And I understand that, like, it's not going to feel good. It's not going to feel great, and it's not going to be fun. Honestly, it didn't feel great voting for him in 2020 for me and for a lot of people. I didn't want to vote for him in 2020. I saw the writing on the wall early in that process. By like 2018, 2019, you can watch it on the news. The news will sort of do this thing where it'll just start to like report on certain candidates more than others, and it will just sort of start to tell you who are going to be the options. And I remember talking to so many people on the left, so many of my friends on the left during that election cycle, and being like, I don't know anyone whose guy is Joe Biden. I don't know anyone on the left who's like, I'm a Biden guy. I knew people who were Kamala Harris people. I knew people who were Elizabeth Warren people. I knew a lot of Bernie people. I knew people who were Buttigieg people. I knew, but I did not know anyone personally who was a Joe Biden person. I didn't know anyone who, like, in the primaries was like, I think Biden. But it was the media started telling us, well, in all the polls, Biden's leading in the polls. And I was like, I just don't buy that. I really do think that when it comes to election interference in the United States, I think it's more about, like, the RNC and the DNC sort of just, like, choosing who they're most comfortable with being their candidate, and then telling voters, this is the most popular candidate that you guys all said in these polls. And I'm like, I don't think that's actually who the most popular candidate was. I think they just told us that's the candidate that we were going to get. And then we knew we had to deal. And they knew that they could sort of put anyone there because they knew we would all be highly motivated to fire Donald Trump. And they were right. We were. Cooking with Silence says, we have time to apply pressure. This conversation happening right now has direct implications that go boom, boom. I don't know if you actually think that we have time in the next 10 months to apply pressure to get a new candidate. I disagree with you. I even knew back in 2020 when people were saying, like, so what's going to happen is we're going to elect Joe Biden and then he'll step aside and Kamala Harris will run in 2024. I was like, no, that won't happen. Because the other thing that both the DNC and the RNC hate to do is they hate to break precedent. And, you know, the courts hate doing that. It's all about precedent. Like, we honor precedent more and more and more in this country, and we have a really hard time breaking precedent. And I just was like, there's no chance without him dying that Joe Biden will actually step aside in 2024. It is unfortunate. It's not fun, but it is so often the situation we find ourselves in this country. Jaron Hatch, who's here. Oh, hello, Jaron. My good friend Jaron Hatch is here. He says, there is legit good stuff we got in the Biden presidency. In some ways, he's the best president in the last 50 years. It's a case of two bad options, but only one party has monopoly on some good. And I couldn't agree more. Now, if you take Joe Biden supporting Israel out of the equation, which I will remind you again, every president in your lifetime has supported Israel. It has been the position of the United States to politically support Israel. My entire lifetime, every candidate you've ever voted for has supported Israel. It's not just like a Joe Biden thing. That's just sort of the United States' de facto position on Israel and Palestine. But if you take that out of the equation and you actually look at the Biden presidency, it's actually kind of staggering how many things Joe Biden has gotten done. I was not prepared to be as surprised as I was by how much got done. In like the first like couple years, there were so many things getting through that I did not expect to see. You know, the infrastructure bill, like there are so many things that happened that I really was not expecting from a Biden presidency. I have a whole series that I did called Something Cool the Biden-Harris Administration Did Recently that I did last year and the year before that you can find on my TikTok page, where there's just several videos where I went through different policies that they were introducing that I thought were actually like pretty surprisingly good. That whole debt relief thing was like, it was not as much as we wanted, but it was still groundbreaking. It was amazing that that got done at all. There has been a lot accomplished, and my friend Jaron Hatch here makes a really good point. What has been accomplished in this presidency is it's kind of a staggering amount in the first 4 years, and I think it's more than anyone had any right to expect was getting done. That being said, the argument, but this guy supports genocide, feels kind of like a, this trumps everything. I don't care how many good bills you put through, you're supporting genocide, and I can't support that. For a lot of people, that feels like a non-negotiable, no-go zone where they dare not, tread. And I get that. I get that feeling. I will just remind you that what is happening in Gaza right now is not happening because we elected Joe Biden in 2020. It would be happening regardless of who we elected. It would be happening. Somebody uncensored on TikTok just says Cop City is what Biden accomplished. So again, Cop City is another one of those things that would have happened and would have been a project regardless of whether we that's not a Joe Biden thing. Joe Biden wasn't like, let's make Cop City. That was a project that was in the works before he was elected. It would have happened whether or not he was elected. He could have done more to stop it. I agree with you. I fucking hate Cop City. As far left people in the United States, we are never going to get nearly everything we want or everything we think we should have. We are always going to have to deal with a fair amount of disappointment and compromise. It's just our unfair lot in the current political dynamic. We do not have mainstream political representation in power. The far right does have mainstream political representation in power. So because that is the dynamic, far right ideals and projects have a far, far higher likelihood of getting accomplished. Projects like Cop City, authoritarian projects like Cop City have a far higher likelihood of becoming accomplished in the United States than leftist projects do. And that's why the few things that we have gotten, actually the long list of things that we've gotten from the Biden-Harris administration, is so impressive. It's impressive that they accomplished so much and that so many of the things that they did accomplish leaned as far left as they did. It does show that we and our popular ideas have influence in the political realm, but we're definitely not going to get all of the stuff that we want ever. We always, as leftists in America, have to deal with disappointment and have to deal with watching far right authoritarian projects and ideas have an easier time of getting through and getting, funded than our ideas and our candidates. But that doesn't mean, and because of that, that's why it's important that we try to limit their power as much as possible. Zechariah says, Biden does not think he will lose power, and I doubt that will change. Biden knows he's a better-than-Trump candidate as well as the incumbent. Totally, yeah. We're not going to effectively pressure Joe Biden to change his position on Israel or call for a ceasefire. I think we could potentially push to try to get better language and understanding and maybe a call for a ceasefire, but we're not, I don't think, in the next 10 months going to convince many mainstream American politicians to denounce Israel. I just don't think that that's a realistic goal to push for. Yeah, so someone just said, La Femme Devastation, this will be the last comment I take because I have to run. I got to go see this movie that I have tickets for. Said, you can't say you're far left, they put it in quotes, if you are willing to weigh Biden's, and I think you mean weigh Biden's presidential accomplishments like reducing a little student loan debt and building a bridge against how he supports Gaza atrocities. So this is exactly what I just said. I just said that for a lot of people, it doesn't matter how many accomplishments he's made, the weight of him not denouncing Israel and calling for a ceasefire and doing everything he can to give aid to Palestinians in Gaza, that outweighs everything for a lot of people. And I understand that position. I get how that seems like a logical, reasonable, moral, respectable position. In many ways, it is. In many ways, it very much so is a moral, ethical position. What it isn't, unfortunately, is a very pragmatic or pragmatic position, or a position that that works in the long term. Because what you're saying essentially is, I want to let this, and this is the whole title of this is the entire purpose of this entire podcast, is you would rather watch the entire United States crumble and burn to the ground and fall into civil war than vote for someone who won't denounce Israel. There will be no mainstream candidates presented to you who will denounce Israel. Those don't exist in the United States, unfortunately. So you're not going to get that. And because you're not going to get that, you'd rather watch the entire thing burn. But essentially what you're saying when you say that is, I'm so disgusted by what I see in Gaza and the atrocities happening there. I'm so disgusted by that, that I want that to happen where I live. I want where I live to be as bad as things are there, because that's how mad I am about what's happening over there. And I don't think that doesn't help anybody over there, and it certainly doesn't help anybody over here. You sort of have to try to focus on, like, where you can preserve safety, where you can prevent harm, and see what good you can do in that space. This person says, no, don't conflate my words. I stand with human life, and I can do a harm reduction vote. Both things can be true. I'm not conflating your words. I'm saying exactly what you're saying. You're saying that you are going to do a vote that to you reduces harm. It won't. If you vote for a third party candidate, you are voting for Donald Trump, and that will not reduce harm. That will increase harm. That will increase the likelihood of harm for people that you love and people that are close to you, and increase the likelihood of very, very, very bad things happening in your immediate vicinity. So you will not be doing a vote for harm reduction, and it definitely will not be a vote for reducing the harm that is happening in Gaza. That will not help anyone in Gaza. It might make you feel like you're not supporting genocide, like, well, I didn't vote for Joe Biden, so I refuse to support what was happening over there. But you're not actually voting to stop it. What your vote is not going to stop it. And your vote is going to make it much more likely that even worse things will happen to you and people that you love. So you actually can't, you know, cast a vote that will effectively help Donald Trump get elected and cast a vote that will contribute to harm reduction. You can't do both of those things. Those things are two separate things. Unfortunately, it sucks. It's not fair. And that's the big thing that, like, I really want you to understand, is, like, this is not something I want. This is the reality of the situation we find ourselves in. We have 10 months to get on the same page about the decision we're about to make. And we, in that time, we are not going to put up a, okay, this person's saying, I'm not illogical. I know that the Biden vote is the harm reduction when compared to Trump. You're assuming I will vote for third party because that is the more principled vote, but I will not do that. Okay, then in that case, I don't know what you're planning on doing. I see that you agree that the Biden vote compared to Trump is the harm reduction vote. So I'm not sure where the disagreement is happening then. Doesn't sound like we are disagreeing. I have to go. I'm going to be late for this movie, and I don't want to be late for it. Thanks for the conversation. I really, really appreciate you guys being open to talking about this. I know that this is, like, not fun. It sucks. It sucks having to compromise on your values like this. It sucks having to constantly see your ideological rivals get the things that they want and get the kind of representation that they want, and you always seem to have to compromise and get a little less than what you were hoping for, or a lot less than what you were hoping for. But I think we just have to try to deal with these things in a pragmatic, what is the most harm reduction that we can contribute to? What is the, how do we prevent make sure that the least harm possible happens, make sure that the far right religious extremists in our midst secure the least possible amount of power. I hope that makes sense, that I'm not sitting here going, I think Joe Biden's awesome and you should too. I'm saying, I get why you're frustrated and why you don't want to support what's going on anymore. But also, the alternative genuinely is kind of terrifying and kind of unthinkable. So love you. Love you all. Thank you for your contributions. Thank you for thoughtful feedback and comments. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You can find all of my music on my Bandcamp at the links in all of my bios on all of my social medias, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. My double vinyl for my album Beautiful Things, the deluxe edition, is for sale there right now. Yeah, late stage capitalism. I gotta hawk my shit at ya. So if you want to support this channel, if you want to support what I'm doing, consider buying that double vinyl. It would make a great holiday gift if you need to do some last minute shopping. This is a great option. This double vinyl, it's beautiful. Available austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. The links in all of my bios. It's right there. Really easy to find. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Love you, my patrons. Thank you for a great year. Thank you for your support. I can't do this without you. Genuinely, your generosity astonishes me and amazes me every single day. Thank you. I love you so much. Okay, be good. Be good to each other. Be good to yourselves. We'll see you next time. Love you so much. Bye-bye.